Are you looking for a first communion, confirmation, or graduation gift? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is the new bonded leather cover edition of Luther's Small and Large Catechisms. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, Martin Luther's Small and Large Catechisms, 1-800-325-3040.
How do you explain this, that 9 years ago you're coaching in high school and here you are with this trophy?
I can only give the praise to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for giving me this opportunity.
Vary your news sources. Be skeptical. Look for news media that are being honest about their point of view and, most importantly, are telling you the sources of their information.
In your contact with Jesus, you have tapped into a source of forgiveness that cannot be exhausted.
Hi, this is Pastor Michael and Lindsay Schmidt of Natoma, Kansas. And we're starting confirmation class early by listening to Issues Etc. Talk radio for the Lutheran baby.
Do you sense it? I'm sure you do, although you may not have put a category to it or a name to it. You may not be able to describe entirely what it is you're sensing there, but let's call it, for the sake of argument, a less than veiled hostility toward everything that you kind of up to this point thought was good or at least decent about Western culture. Now, it might not be said out loud. And it might be said out loud. It might be screamed in the streets. In fact, perhaps what we are seeing in so much of the social foment, in our country at least nowadays, is a very unveiled hostility toward Western culture. The assumption is that Western culture is the problem. It's the root of all problems, perhaps even the root of all evils, that it is about white privilege, white male privilege, that it is about the patriarchy, that it is about old and archaic and perhaps even evil ways of considering society and one another, even things like perhaps the Constitution, because it was authored by, well, rich white men, probably is tainted with that same evil. Well, there, we've said it. This is the assumption on the part of many, whether they admit it or not, that Western culture is a curse rather than, well, at least in a human sense, a blessing. We're going to be talking about the despising of Western culture for the second hour of Issues Etc. Welcome back on this Tuesday afternoon, the 6th of February. Joining us to discuss this subject, Dr. Alvin Schmidt, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of several books, including How Christianity Changed the World. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me.
I want to establish a baseline before we talk about where we are today and how we got there. Was there a time when the general, not obviously never unanimous, but the general assumption was that Western civilization or Western culture was in a lot of ways kind of the pinnacle of civilization and that it was in a lot of ways superior to other civilizations and cultures? And why?
Yes, there was, and it was a conclusion, for example, that was reached in specifically 1868 in Japan under Emperor Meiji, who decided that the culture of Japan needs to adopt the basic values underlying Western culture. And the result of that, Japan became a major power and still is to this day. So here you have a non-Western who recognized that there was something unique and beneficial for economy, for people, to adopt the Western model. And so it was not someone from the West that was saying this, but he, looking from the outside, recognized that there was something in the West that they needed and that the rest of the world didn't have either. So, yes, that's perhaps one of the best examples we can cite in terms of someone, in this case, finally a whole country, seeing Western culture being superior in terms of a whole host of factors, economically, politically, in terms of freedom and all these accompanying factors.
How do you respond to someone who would say, and they certainly will say nowadays, it is bigoted to regard Western culture as in any way superior to any other culture or civilization?
Well, that is true. And basically, that is, in essence, the origin of multiculturalism, which basically surfaced in the early 1920s, almost 100 years ago, by radicals. One of them, key mover in it, was a guy by the name of Georg Lukács, a Hungarian who, early in his life, was a part of the, well, he was People's Commissar for Culture and Education under the communist dictator of Béla Kun, K-U-N. His very short-lived communist rule in Hungary lasted only about 6 months in 1919. Given the fall of that, Lukács moved to Germany. And in the early 1920s, he, for example, angrily asked, quote, "Who will save us from Western culture?" end quote. There you have the beginnings, basically, as best as I can determine, the ground basis of multiculturalism. It was a despising of Western culture. And then he became very early, 1923, an organization was formed in Frankfurt, Germany, called the Frankfurt School, Frankfurt Schule in German. They attracted numerous radical intellectuals. For example, like Herbert Marcuse, who was very popular in the 1960s campus rebellions that we had during the Vietnam War and also into the 1970s. Eric Fromm, the psychologist, Georg Simmel, a sociologist in Germany, Ernst Bloch, Theodor Adorno, who became very, very popular in designing what was called the Authoritarian Personality Index. And this school continues to this day. These are the individuals that basically ultimately brought about a full movement of multiculturalism. It was not just confined anymore to the Frankfurt School, but now it's spread. And it's interesting, as you know, I published a book 20 years ago in 1997 called The Menace of Multiculturalism, subtitled The Trojan Horse in America. And in that book, I also allude to the factor, where and how did multiculturalism begin and have its origins? And it's that time you also had in vogue the practice of, or the belief, shall I say, of relativism. And at the basis of multiculturalism lies relativism. In other words, the Western culture is at best a relative example. There's nothing that is better about it in terms of any given value, truth or freedom, what have you. And so, for example, the term multiculturalism really didn't make it into the index of periodical literature. They are no longer published, to my knowledge, but these were big volumes that were issued every year in the green volume. And any article that was printed in any kind of journal or periodical could be found in those issues. They were extremely helpful for before the days of Google and computer. And that particular, the word multiculturalism didn't make it into that literature until the late 1950s, and still another 10 years before it became a part of the language outside of the professional literature. And by the 1970s, we heard it more and more, and by the 1980s, even more so. And it was in it to this day. And multiculturalism has been falsely sold to the average individual by thinking or believing what they tell the average individual, namely that it's learning about other cultures. That is a blatant lie. It's the most deceptive kind of term. But again, multiculturalists, or the origin of it back to, as I said, the Frankfurt School, basically operated with the end justifies the means. It very much was a Marxist, neo-Marxist orientation, and is to this day. And so ultimately, truth was that which served the people, not something that was apart and separate from the people, and that was to guide the people, but it grew out of the social context of individuals. And so that philosophy was adopted also in the Berkeley riots that we had them in the 1960s and 70s, and it's in vogue to this day in a slightly different form, again, about talking about white privilege, for example. And what's often not known is that people who have been spreading this kind of thing, white privilege, and that this is just another example of Western culture being evil and taking advantages of those who have not had the opportunities and whatnot all. And so a lot of people have misunderstood. You see, for example, I've seen it in periodical index of church publications, including in our own Lutheran circles, where multiculturalism is seen as simply another form of learning about other cultures. I'm a great believer about other cultures. I like studying foreign language. I've traveled a lot. But that's not the same. Multiculturalism, and here is a very important point, is an ism. It's an ideology. The very fact that it has ism at the back in it indicates it's an ideology. It is not an educational method. When one learns foreign languages, you and I both have, you invariably learn something about the culture, whether you study Greek or Latin or German or whatever it might be. That's not multiculturalism, however. It's simply an appreciation of the so-called liberal arts bent of education. But people have been misled in this guy, and purposely so. They try to mislead people, thinking that simply education, this way they can further their agenda and not really arouse the masses, so to speak. So this continues to this very day. It's a basic effort to undermine, as Lucas said, who will save us from the Western culture. In other words, who and how can we replace it, undermine it, because Marxism, which Frankfurt School is very much part of, is a revolutionary thought. And it's like Karl Marx once said, our purpose is not to understand the world, but to change it. And to change it, he meant by revolution, which happened in 1917 in Russia, that basically then not only took over in Russia, but later on became the Soviet Union and took a hold of a lot of other countries like that weren't part of Russia, for example, like the Ukraine, Bulgaria, Romania, and so on down the line. So that's the agenda. The agenda is to get rid of Western culture. And Western culture is seen today. You see it, for example, when you just listen to the propaganda that's going on. The Western culture were people who took advantage of the minorities, for example, the people in Africa and in other countries. And so basically, the prosperity of the West is something that was stolen and robbed from the West. And therefore, we have to, another argument, to remove this culture. And one of the best ways to do it is to bring about conflict. When you introduce all these other different cultures, as we have already seen, for example, in the Balkan area, with the Serbs and the Croats and the Slovenes, for example, already before World War One, were at each other's throats, killing each other. And as we know, back in the 1990s, they were talking about ethnic cleansing. You cannot have a united country or united culture when you have every culture on its equal level. For example, take language alone. Language divides a culture. As I argue in my book, The Menace of Multiculturalism, the Roman Empire began to crumble when it began to make Latin and Greek both official languages. You see it in Quebec, for example, the conflict. You see it in the Balkans, where several languages are. You can never have a united country with two or more languages. And, for example, this is why the United States has been a great boon. We used to operate in this country, as the immigrants came into this country, to learn English. even the immigrants who couldn't speak one word, when they'd get off the ship at Ellis Island, would tell to their children, now you have to learn English. And they were happy to learn it. Today, multiculturalism tells people not to assimilate, not to learn the English language. And since we have even in schools that offer, for example, Spanish rather than English, no more are you expected to be immersed in it and learn the language. In California, you have, I think, 20 or 40 different languages that you can use in order to obtain a driver's license, indicating that whether you can read the road signs or not is not important, but to keep their people's culture is more important. So that's the ethic. It keeps on going. There's virtually no end in terms of trying to undermine what the West once accomplished. And the multiculturalists know by introducing all these cultures, arguing, for example, we should no longer have a melting pot, but a salad bowl is the expression. Well, all of that means they should not be integrated, and eventually they know it's going to bring a conflict which will destroy the Western culture. And that's their goal. That alone would make them happy.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about despising Western culture on this Tuesday afternoon, February the 6th. When we come back, he had mentioned that term white male privilege. What is it intended to communicate, and what does he make of it? We'll be right back.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Come, Holy Spirit, Lord and Comforter, with words of truth our feeble faith assure. These words open Mark Preuss's new Pentecost hymn for the Lutheran Church, available exclusively in the Lutheran Witness. Grab the May issue of the Missouri Synod's flagship magazine and dig into what the Bible and Lutheran theology have to say about the Holy Spirit, who He is, how He works, and what He wants for your life. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're visiting Frankenmuth, Michigan, come to Emmanuel Lutheran Church in nearby Frankentrost. A hardy band of German missionaries founded Emmanuel Frankentrost in the wilderness near Saginaw. At Emmanuel, you can still hear the law and gospel in a beautiful liturgical service, just like those first settlers. For directions and divine service times, visit frankentrost.org. That's FRANKENTROST.org.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns. You pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. Churchmusicsolutions.com. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the despising of Western culture. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest, professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College and author of several books, including How Christianity Changed the World and The Menace of Multiculturalism. Dr. Schmidt, you used that term before, white male privilege. What is it intended to mean, and how do you respond to it?
Well, again, it's a term that is used by what I would say the media elite. It is not the term that the majority of the country would use or even accept, but it's a term that has been used and to some extent is making an impact, largely because our country, and to some extent Europeans as well in terms of the West, have been made to feel guilty relative to some of the social evils that did exist in the West. For example, slavery. And the West has greatly changed practice away from slavery, partly because I think they were influenced by a Christian value, a Christian ethic, if you will, to remove slavery and other forms of discrimination. But when you listen to, for example, the so-called accusation made that white privilege is still in existence, they do not recognize. Do you know there are many black leaders, for example, who are very much opposed to this white privilege argument? That, for example, this is the whole truth and so on. You see, what's interesting is that the West, having been predominantly influenced by cultural Christian values in its culture, has also left, even to those people who are not Christians, an effect of Christian. In other words, that you should feel sorry and be repentant of things that you've done that weren't right, which, for example, is often translated today perhaps as white guilt. And because there is white guilt in our society, over internalized, I might argue, on the part of the people who are white, so that they have done not just being happy or content with removing discrimination, but bending over backwards to do more than they possibly can even do the moment you're accused of being guilty of white privilege. The argument isn't made by white people. Show us how. No, we're not. They tend to accept it on the basis of white guilt and overcompensating for the guilt. And ultimately, this in part has Christian roots. Not that Christian would necessarily accept a lot of this today, but that's how the very term guilt. You don't find that in Muslim literature, in Muslim countries. There is no feeling of guilt when a Muslim terrorist does something evil or when they rape women, for example, in France and Germany. There is no feeling of guilt. But Christians, when they do this, even when they're taken to court, most of them will feel guilty. You see, this is the influence of the Western culture that had absorbed a great deal of Christian values. And that's why the term white privilege is used today. And again, it's a term to intimidate. It is a term to advance anti-Western cultural values and take over the present existing cultural values. That's the goal.
What is the relationship between multiculturalism and what has come to be called political correctness?
Well, that's another good example. Again, it has Marxist roots. It came out of the early years in communist Russia, the term of political correctness, that if you didn't agree with the party, you were politically incorrect. And, of course, then during the Lenin era and the Stalin era, millions of people were killed and executed because they were not politically correct. They did not agree with the Marxist communist ideology. And so, for example, that's basically what political correctness is. Now, the multiculturalists do not use the term politically correct. It is used by the critics, like myself and other people who see what's going on with multiculturalism, that it's undermining our country, and the ultimate result, if it doesn't stop, we will have a massive revolution on our hands, because you cannot unite the country, as I alluded a little while ago, with two cultures, much less five or six, because people, being basically lazy, will never learn two languages, much less three or four. And with languages come certain values. And the United States was always considered to be a melting pot. It was basically that way in Germany and in France, too. They were not to the same degree, but it was basically a melting pot. When immigrants came, they absorbed the culture, they learned the language, and eventually felt like a citizen of that country. And in this country today, for example, and you see it in part even in other ways, for example, in the football, when players kneel at the national anthem is another example of their having internalized multiculturalist values. And what does it do? Well, it doesn't even help football. The moment you introduce another cultural value along with another one, there's going to be competition and eventually even conflict. So the whole idea of multiculturalism and political correctness, and with political correctness, you and I are forced in many ways, and before long, we echo culture. For example, we today tend to, for example, have already adopted a great deal of, even in church literature. I have told people in Bible classes for the last 20, 25 years, when you see in writings and you see it in church periodicals, the term B.C., before Christ, is no longer acceptable. That's politically incorrect today. It's supposed to be B.C.E., before the common era. They never tell us what the common era is or what it means. Likewise with A.D., in other words, after the birth of Christ. That today is removed and replaced in almost all literature today, particularly in professional theological literature that basically have adopted it, books and articles that use, for example, CE now, meaning the common era. In other words, that which happened after Jesus Christ is born. So strong, and if I had an example, for example, when I published The Menace of Multiculturalism, I was supposed to do this. I said, no, I will not do it. It's my book. It has been reviewed by other people who proved it. And I said, I'm going to keep it. And I did keep it. I don't think if I had published today, I would succeed in winning the argument. But when you do that, there are serious implications. When you take change from B.C. to B.C.E. and from A.D. to C.E., you have taken Jesus Christ out of history. And that's a multicultural goal. That's what they want, because it was the Christian ethic that ultimately has brought about what they think is detrimental to the culture of the West, and that must be removed. And so you remove it slowly, steadily, by means of education, introducing multiple languages in schools. You permit people, as I mentioned a little while ago, you don't have to even learn the English language to get a driver's license. You go into the store and or your computer and you print it on. Well, you don't get English, you get Spanish. Well, all of this is what multiculturalists advocate. And ultimately, the more this grows, the more the country will be divided. It is now coming to the point where people are beginning to be hesitant to say they are American, because America ultimately has been the Western culture, and that Western culture must be changed and is not all that good. And more of that is what people slowly believe. We are beginning to apologize and feel sorry for being an American. That again shows we have in part internalized the multicultural idea, and we have become politically correct. Also, you see it operating in many other contexts. For example, you hear on television, no longer is a person called a congressman, it's a congresswoman. A chairperson is now the term for chairman, even though Robert's Rules of Order still uses the word chairman. And it was always an accepted thing. It did not have any male connotations. And so, for example, I just saw this morning a cartoon, I believe it was on the Drudge Report, relative to what's going on in Canada, where Trudeau, the radical multiculturalist kind of premier they have, prime minister, wants to change, for example, does it get rid of the term man when it is the first part of a word. And so here's a picture, him about to step into a manhole. They said, be careful, you're going to step into a people hole. You see the ridiculousness of what it gets. But this is what's interesting, as I also indicate, even though we can no longer say, by the way, the term manhood is what he's trying to change, and we are slowly accepting this. And when we do this, we have slowly bought into the multicultural ethic, and before long, more and more of the Western society begins to shrivel and disappear.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about despising Western culture on this Tuesday afternoon. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of several books, including The Menace of Multiculturalism and How Christianity Changed the World. When we come back, we're going to talk about why the United States and its founding documents have become the focus of the hostility that we see toward Western culture. You can meet and hear Matt Walsh, Ross Douthat, Carol Tobias, Matt Harrison, Hans Feeney, Wesley Smith, Will Whedon, Jonathan Fisk, and Tom Korchak at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Registration is $125. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Are you a high school guy or girl interested in theology and thinking about becoming a pastor or deaconess? Christ Academy High School at Concordia Theological Seminary is the thing for you. Spend 2 weeks worshiping and learning like a seminary student while having fun and building lasting friendships. Join us this summer at Christ Academy from June 16th to the 29th. Visit ctsfw.edu/ca for more info.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Atonement Lutheran, Glendale, Arizona. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Emmett, Idaho. Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming. Grace Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Concordia Lutheran, Sikeston, Missouri. St. Paul Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska. Zion Lutheran, Winter Garden, Florida. Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Calvary Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Sylvan Grove, Kansas. And St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at the website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Luther Academy serves Lutheran pastors and lay people to the ends of the earth. They're hosting a continuing education conference next week in the Philippines. You can learn more about this worldwide confessional Lutheran mission outreach at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com. We're talking about Despising Western Culture. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest, author of the book, The Menace of Multiculturalism and How Christianity Changed the World. Before we talk a little bit about the American context, why is it that this general hostility toward Western culture seems to single out Christianity among all the world religions for its ire?
That's true. It does very much. That's another thing that we as Christians need to recognize. Multiculturalism, really at the very basis of it, is anti-Christian and really sees, and in many ways they're right. The great advances that have happened in Europe have been a great deal the result of Christian values. That's why I wrote the book, How Christianity Changed the World. I might add, just in passing, it's now in 9 foreign languages. People from other countries have recognized that Christianity has contributed to the prosperity, the freedoms of the West. Ironically, when the European was formed a few years ago, they denied to give any kind of credit to the influence of Christianity on its culture. There you see again that the multiculturalists have had some success in getting people who formulated the European Union to completely remove and reject Christianity when you have 2,000 years of history that can be so well documented that brought Europe to a state of prosperity and having freedom and opportunity that it didn't have before. But again, it cannot be recognized because it's an old argument. Don't confuse me with facts. My mind is made up. And Christianity is defined as evil. And as a result of that, we need to get rid of any value that is related to Christianity. And one of the things that Christianity obviously always taught was unity and harmony among people. Koinonia was the Greek word. In other words, fellowship or getting together. Well, multiculturalism doesn't like that because that means that you'd focus in on one culture and the others would not be on an equal par. So Christianity also teaches, for example, the Ten Commandments. As I have often said, Islam has no Ten Commandments, whether it's any of the Ten Commandments you want to cite. They're non-existent. The Ten Commandments also became, again, biblical Christian values became, they underlie the American Constitution. Many of the founding fathers of the United States were not Christians, but they absorbed Christian values. Thomas Jefferson is a good example. He was a deist. But when you read his writings, it's very clear he accepted the Christian morality. And so did other people, James Madison and Washington. They all did. And, of course, this is why today you see a lot of people destroying statues, because these people are, by the way, the multiculturalists often use that term very pejoratively, the so-called Eurocentric culture or Euro-American culture. And again, those have to be removed and from the scene and let other cultures take over. And again, when you talk about Euro-American or Eurocentric culture, which is a pejorative term, they see under that, and rightly so, a great deal of Christian influence. The American Constitution is an excellent example of its values, whether it's the Constitution itself or the amendments, particularly the Bill of Rights, the first 10, were very much influenced by Christian freedom that had never been experienced before in the world of mankind. The 10 first amendments we have basically tell the American government what it cannot do rather than what it can or should do. Today, we're trying to move away from that. But the fact that it told the government you cannot do this, whether it was the Fourth Amendment of private property rights, that you couldn't walk into a person's house without a search warrant, was an example of saying you, the government, can't do that. Now, in a totalitarian government, whether it's a fascist government or communist country, there are no such things as search warrants. The police walk in whenever they want to and search and do whatever they feel like doing. Well, our Fourth Amendment in the Bill of Rights doesn't permit that. It doesn't permit a lot of other things. It also indicated that you could have, like in the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of press. Again, indicating it was influenced by Christian values, which never before in the history of mankind had ever been embodied in a constitution. The United States was the first one to do it. And as a result of having done this, I have to say, God blessed this country for a long time. But if it begins to accept more and more multiculturalist values, like, for example, removing Christian symbols from schools that you can no longer, even in the military, chaplains are not supposed to pray in the name of Jesus Christ, this country will obviously greatly change, and I believe it will also no longer be blessed as it once has, because we were never a Christian country, to be sure. But we were a country that was founded on Christian values. That's very different. Often there are some zealots that say we were a Christian country or still a Christian country. No, we never were that. But we did adopt Christian values, and that made us, in some people's eyes, look like we were Christian. But we weren't. If we were a Christian country, we would have adopted the Apostles' Creed, for example. But that was never any discussion and would never have happened. So again, the Christian values have deeply influenced the entire West. And, of course, today it's greatly disappearing because it is not only in this country, but in the West, that Christian values, you see it in, are being removed, Christian symbols are being removed, and it's the, when that happens, the multiculturalists are achieving goals that they desire to have achieved.
How has Western civilization improved man's lot with respect to his civic freedoms?
Well, for example, slavery is an excellent example. I have an entire chapter in how Christianity changed the world and documented from the best sources how Christians were, for the most part, anti-slavery already in the early 3rd century. A slave became the Bishop of Rome, which today is often called a pope. And Christians and slaves worshiped together. They went. They were baptized. They went to the Lord's Supper together. And I document numerous sources where hundreds and thousands of Christians released slavery. Now, I must admit, there were some who, Christians, even some church fathers, who didn't see a problem with slavery. But for the most part, that was not true. And as a result of that, Christianity's influence in the West ultimately removed slavery. Where, for example, it still exists today in Muslim-dominated countries in Africa. Slavery on the part of Muslims was only reluctantly accepted here and there, but it still exists in countries like Mauritania, for example, and other, in Nigeria. A few years ago, I had a friend from Jacksonville, Illinois, who went to Nigeria on a rotary trip. He said, I stayed in a house where slaves were kept. Well, this is not unusual. So Christianity was on the forefront of removing slavery. It was on the forefront of removing slavery in this country. The abolitionist movement before the Civil War was already primarily spearheaded and operated by Christian clergy from various denominations. And before long, lay people got involved. And who wrote the famous book, Uncle Tom's Cabin? And when she was asked, or Lincoln encountered her, she said, she's the little lady who caused the big war. I grew up in Canada, so I had never read Uncle Tom's Cabin. But when I did my research, for example, for how Christianity changed the world, I decided I'd better read that book. And lo and behold, to my surprise, that book is so interlarded with biblical statements throughout the book opposing slavery, which ultimately led to the Civil War in 1861 and lasted for about 4 years. And that's why Lincoln said this little woman caused the big war. Again, it happened because of Christian values. Now, it's amazing, for example, how secular history books, I myself never knew this when I took history, ignore that entirely. Christians were, or Christianity, is blamed for slavery. The very opposite is true. And it's not hard to make a case that what we read in the school textbook is absolutely false. And my chapter in How Christianity Changed the World documents this, that Christianity was under the basic influence why slavery was removed. Based, for example, on Galatians 3:28, there's neither Jew nor Greek nor slave nor free. Christians, for the most part, took that seriously. Now, it took a long time because it wasn't a clear-cut message that everybody accepted. But eventually, I argue that the good Lord's purposes eventually comes to the fore.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We'll have 10 more minutes with him on the other side of the break talking about despising Western culture. We've just discussed here how Western civilization improved on freedoms. What about economic freedom as well? We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is author of several books, including How Christianity Changed the World and The Menace of Multiculturalism. Stay tuned.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Be Strong and Courageous from Joshua 1:9 is the theme for the 41st academic year at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page or call me, Dr. J. Krause, Principal at 618-656-0043.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During May, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about despising Western culture. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. LCMSU connects and supports Lutheran students as they head off to college and face countless challenges to their biblical worldview, including multiculturalism, and they will face it. Be sure to tell your college-age child, grandchild, or godchild about LCMSU. Find them lcms.org/LCMSU, lcms.org/LCMSU. Dr. Schmidt, let's talk a little bit about the economic benefits of Western culture.
Yes, and that's another example that indicates a great deal of Christian influence. One of the key factors in economic prosperity is the concept of private property, which comes from where? From the seventh commandment, say, thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not steal commandment assumes that there is a right for the person to have private property. In addition to that, for example, you have the emphasis of freedom of individuals attaining private property, not just holding it, keeping it, but acquiring it. And this, again, underlies basically capitalism, the right of an individual to buy, to sell. Under totalitarian governments, whether it's socialism, communism, fascism, those rights are greatly curbed, if not entirely eliminated. And so, again, multiculturalism doesn't like that either, because obviously prosperity has made this country great, has made the European countries in the past quite successful, and socialism is the opposite of free economic freedom, and it never works. For example, we have even in our own country, for example, when the pilgrims came over this country in Jamestown, for example, and in Plymouth, initially they started off in a socialistic manner. Things deteriorated. Nothing happened really in terms. Finally, they removed, they gave individuals private property, and before long, they became prosperous because every person wanted to produce so that he would have something beneficial to himself, not only to eat, but maybe even to sell. And Christianity, for example, again, is not something that's compatible with socialism or communism. And so economic prosperity had a great deal to do with a Christian influence. And the very concept of work in itself was noble. These have St. Paul saying to the Thessalonians, if someone does not work, he shouldn't eat. Well, again, the motive of working, often been called, for example, the spirit of capitalism. There was a book written by Max Weber on it, The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism, in which he argued it was the Protestant emphasis on private property and the freedom of economic opportunities that brought about prosperity in the West. Classic work to this day, obviously, has been greatly examined by many men in the scholars and the like, but it's still a pretty strong basis. It wasn't, for example, the Protestant itself made for capitalism, but it was the spirit that underlies Protestantism, and that spirit was basically largely biblically derived. And so Christianity, again, and if you look, for example, in the world, which countries have been the most prosperous? It is those who had a Christian ethic. And going back to what I said at the outset of the interview, this is why Emperor Meiji in the 1860s in Japan wanted to do something similar. Now, Japan never was a Christian country, is not to this day. But he saw something operative that was making the West prosperous, and so he adopted it. And as I said, Japan became a prosperous, powerful country.
So why do many I got two final questions for you, about a minute or so for each. Why do many multiculturalists seem to put the worst construction on Western culture, but the best construction on other cultures like Islamic or Indian or African culture?
Because by putting a good best construction on the other cultures, they see it as a convenient way of undermining Christianity. It's not that they necessarily like that. But that's why, for example, they're taciturn about talking about the lack of freedom that women have, for example. If Christians, if we in the West would treat women like Islamic countries do, the media would talk about it every 10 minutes. But as a result of the Muslims doing it, they will not even mention it, or if they do, reluctantly so and briefly so, because that would, by implication, give great deal of credit to the West, which has brought about the freedom of women and opportunities because of a Christian ethic, again, if I may use that term.
Finally, how do you respond to people who state that the U.S. Constitution, democracy, capitalism are all evil because they are the creations of white men? 1 minute, Dr. Schmidt.
Well, it's an example of unsubstantiated prejudice. It's simply accusing somebody without any evidence. Just because the whites wrote it doesn't mean to say it is for some reason or another not acceptable anymore. The whites happened to be, at that time, basically influenced the Christian values, and so it incorporated it. But at the same time, you have, as I said just a little while ago, with the Emperor Meiji, even though he was not white and not Christian, nevertheless adopted a value that the constitutional writers in this country did, or for that matter, for example, back in England in 1215 with the signing of the Magna Carta. Here you had an excellent example of the king being forced to agree with the barons to give people freedom and rights that they never had before. And the preface to the Magna Carta was written by a Christian archbishop in England, and quotes copiously the biblical basis for the Magna Carta, which, as we know, is the foundation even of the American Constitution, basically greatly influenced by that document itself.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of several books, including How Christianity Changed the World and The Menace of Multiculturalism. You can purchase these books under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Schmidt, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, my guy.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get a review of Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University from Pastor Jonathan Connor, and we'll continue our series introducing the books of the Bible, talking with Pastor Brian Wolfmuller about the book of Deuteronomy, the very last of the five books of Moses. We'll talk about how the law is reiterated, repeated, and reinforced before the people enter into the promised land. The covenant must be made clear to a generation that, well, they were either little kids or weren't even around when the people of Israel stood at the foot of Sinai at the beginning of their journey, and it all needs to be retaught. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt. And the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People at lutheracademy.com.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
If you appreciate Issues Etc., Talk Radio for the Thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.